Yeah, you know, we've been destroying Democrats all day. We haven't even gotten to Hillary yet. Huh. What fun this hour is going to be. Greetings, my good buddies, and welcome back. Broadcast excellence all yours on a program that meets and surpasses all audience expectations on a daily basis. A thrill and a delight to have you with us. The telephone number, if you want to be on the program, is 800-282-2882. Email address rush@eibnet.com. Now, I mentioned, I think at this time, in the last hour, about an hour ago, that our scientists and engineers are working on a special video treat. And I was hopeful that I could be announcing the treat's availability in this program. And that moment has come. That moment has arrived. As many of you who have gone to the website and clicked on the links to see the videos provided to us by Sergeant Clay. What's Clay's last name, Mr. Winterbull? Clay, so Sergeant Clay Smith. He's the caller from a week ago Tuesday during her fourth and fifth hour presentation on the internet that just had everybody practically crying. We replayed that call the next day, the day before Thanksgiving. And Sergeant Clay Smith had mentioned he had sent me a couple of videos that he produced and made, and he didn't know if I had seen them, and I had not, lost in the mail or in the big sacks and stuff, and never got it. He gave us a link, a website link, to where those videos could be played, so people logged on and looked at them, and I've been deluged with email from people who have seen Sergeant Clay Smith's videos. They've made them cry, and they've said, we've got to find a way to get more people to see these. And I said, well, there's a problem. They're not our property, and the website where they are is not our property. So we sought permission, and we got permission from Sergeant Clay Smith for those videos to be downloadable. Now, that was yesterday. So we made those videos as downloadable files. Here's the treat. This is what we just completed. Those same videos, Sergeant Clay Smith videos that you've been able to see by going to rushlimbaugh.com, have now been converted into the QuickTime format and to the proper size to be viewed on a video iPod. And those links are now at the top of the homepage at rushlimbaugh.com under the headline Free Video iPod Exclusive. Click for Sergeant Clay Smith videos optimized for your video iPod. So they're all ready to go. If you have a video iPod or something similar that plays downloadable video, just click on the link. It'll download it. It'll perfect it. You can then import it into your iTunes, and that way you can get it onto your iPod or your device. And now these videos, not just downloadable, but now they are portable. Sergeant Clay Smith gave us permission to do this because obviously he's proud of the videos too, and he wants everybody to as possible to see them. So this is what we've done, and it's as I say, when we announced earlier this week that on September or December 12th, we will be video podcasting 90 seconds each day. The morning update at the end of this program, every program I record the next day is morning commentary. We call it the morning updates, 90 seconds. Starting December 12th, that will be ditto cammed, and that will also arrive at no extra charge. For those of you who already subscribed to the website and avail yourselves of the opportunity for the free podcast, so we're going to add these 90-second updates every day in the form of video. And as I said, this is just the beginning. We got all kinds of plans here because we are on the technological cutting edge, and we know that this audience is one of the most technologically advanced and astute and interested audiences. Speaking of which, I have to tell you this. As you know, CompUSA is one of our major sponsors. And every week there's a new product that we highlight called the Rush Pick of the Week. And you know, I'm pretty technologically advanced. I mean, I love that stuff. I tried to stay up on it as long as I could. It outdistanced me some years ago, my ability to keep up with it all. But the thing they sent me this week to play around with is a new digital camera by Sony. It's the DH or DSC, whatever, N1. It's a CyberShot N1. N as in nude. One. And I started playing with it last night. I've never seen a camera like that. There may be others like that out there. I'm not that well versed. It's got a 3-inch screen. It's a touch. What are you laughing at, Brian? Is this funny? I'm talking about this camera. And he's in there laughing. It's distracting. Don't want people to think this is funny. It's a touch screen operation, and every feature on the camera is a touch screen. You just touch the screen, change the menus, change the pages, touch what you want. It's simple. It's the first camera I've not needed an instruction book to figure out. What are you laughing at, Snerdly? What is this, old hat to you guys? What? No, oh, you're just there laughing at the nude business. Well, what else are you going to say? Negative one. I don't want to say negative. Just, you know, sometimes people think you're saying M when you're saying, it's like when I say, if it were the M1, I would say as in maternity. Anyway, it's the, go into CompUSA, say you want the Sony Nude 1. Tell them Rush Limbaugh sent you in to get the Sony Nude 1. That'll be fun. We'll see what happens. It's not, well, it is on sale. Like it's $500, but they throw in a 512 megabyte flash card. Their camera card was a flash, I think. It's a little memory stick. Anyway, it's 8.1 megapixels is the point. It is 8.1 megapixels. So I took this out, taking pictures last night at night to see how it would do. It's got all these settings for fireworks, candlelight, nighttime. And I was just experimenting, took some pictures this morning just to show some hurricane damage to some people. And it's just amazing. And I've had digital cameras. I've been playing around with them, get tired of them with them after a while, but this thing is so easy to use. And that screen is, 3 inches screen. There's no viewfinder. That's it. That 3-inch screen, that's touchscreen as well. So, you know, it's like Christmas. Well, it is Christmas time. I was going to say, but it's, I carry the thing around with me now because I never know when I'm going to take a picture or have a picture taken of me. But anyway, that's just an example. We are on the cutting edge of technology here. And so we've got these free downloadable Sergeant Clay Smith videos suitable now for downloading to your iPod or other comparable type device that plays video. And it's just a little service that we wanted to provide based on the massive interest and demand for these things. All right. What? Snerdly is asking me if the Sony Nude 1 will shoot the... You mean this chocolate vagina? He wants to know if it will shoot the chocolate vagina. No, you could get rid of the glare on the wrapper with the Sony Nude 1. There's no question. Snerdly, I got an email from a nurse. A registered nurse who said, you know, these babes that are making these chocolate vaginas, actually, that's not a vagina. I looked at you showing it up on the ditto cam. She says, it's not a vagina. See, that's what most people might think is a vagina, but it's not the vagina. Okay, let me do the 5-4. If you don't want to hear any more, go away and then come back in about 30 seconds. It'll be over with. You don't want to be offended. 5-4-3-2-1. She said a chocolate vagina would simply be a chocolate tube. And this is not it. You don't know what it is? You don't know what the real name of this is? Ask Dawn. I got to take a timeout. Back after this. Stay with us.
You're listening to Rush Limbaugh on the Excellence in Podcasting Network.
Okay, let's stay on this LA Times story since Megan from New York City got us onto this. Let me again give you the details of this. The headline, U.S. military covertly pays to run stories in Iraqi media. As part of an information offensive in Iraq, the U.S. military is secretly paying Iraqi newspapers to publish stories written by American troops in an effort to burnish the image of the U.S. mission in Iraq. The articles written by U.S. military information operations troops are translated into Arabic and placed in Baghdad newspapers with the help of a defense contractor, according to military officials and documents obtained by the Los Angeles Times. Many of the articles are presented in the Iraqi press as unbiased news accounts, written and reported by independent journalists. The stories trumpet the work of U.S. and Iraqi troops, denounce insurgents, and tout U.S.-led efforts to rebuild the country, though the articles are basically factual. Then what's the problem? Well, read on. Though the articles are basically factual, they present only one side of events, and they omit information that might reflect poorly on the U.S. or Iraqi governments. Of course, Al Jazeera is perfectly fine to do what they do. You'll never hear the U.S. media criticize Al Jazeera. And if you want pure propaganda, that's Al Jazeera. As I say, the only reason the press would be upset about this is if you somehow distrust your own country. And I think that's what modern journalism is. Modern journalism is the suspicion that your country is rotten and evil. And you go on that premise, and then your job is to uncover it all. Not individuals. It's one thing to think, like, I believe that a lot of Democrats, I'm suspicious of a lot of Democrats, they are suspicious of the country. The media is suspicious of the country. This is unfair. Why would we, if we can't win on the battlefield, we don't deserve to win. Military has always had what are called PSYOPs, psychological operations. They always have them. It's part and parcel of what they do, and it's no different than what the press itself does. The press selectively excludes news items. That probably is as great an indication of bias as anything else they do. What they don't tell us, what they don't report, what they leave out of stories. And here they are now being critical of this. It reminded me back in, December of 04, about a year ago, I think it was, the Los Angeles Times revealed that the U.S. military lied to CNN in the course of executing PSYOPs in advance of the recent attack on Fallujah. Now, here's why. Everybody knows that if you leak operational battle plans to the press, they'll publish them. If you leak what's going on in the CIA, they'll publish it. If you leak anything to them, they'll publish it, particularly if they think it's going to hurt Bush. So the Pentagon leaked a phony attack date to CNN when we were going to make our first move on Fallujah. And the reason for it, the military wanted to see what that story would produce in terms of a response or a preparation by the terrorists who occupied Fallujah so that we would know what we were up against. Now, you know, in an ideal world where the military, where the press and the country were on the same team, the military would be able to go to the press and say, you know, we want to do, we're going to have this major attack, but we want to find out what the enemy is going to do. And so we need your help. We want to plant a false start date for this. And in an ideal world, the military says, oh, yeah, well, we're Americans, too, and we want to win this war, and we want as few Americans killed as possible. So that's a good idea. We'll run that. No. That's ideal, and that will not happen. The press feels used. They felt betrayed. There were calls for investigations. There were demands for people to be fired. Why, if you lied to the press about this, you'll lie to the press about everything. We can't ever trust you again. The substance, the context was totally ignored. The reason for it. And this is where a lot of people just part ways with many in the mainstream media. Here is Ray in New Orleans. We're back on the air at WWL, AM 870 in New Orleans today. They're getting back to normal in the city and WWL resuming normal operations. So we're back. Ray, great to have you with us.
Hello, Rush.
Hi.
And, you know, things are not returning to normal. I know that you love New Orleans. I wish that you would come down here and see for yourself what is happening. And while you're on the subject of speeches given by the president,
yes,
he came to New Orleans and gave a speech in front of St. Louis Cathedral when his response to Hurricane Katrina was drawing some criticism. And all lies. None of the things that he promised are happening. And, like, at this moment, small businesses are going down the drain. Nothing is being done to help the people who live in the Ninth Ward and Gentilly and you know, and the lakefront to come back to New Orleans. And today,
Wait a second. Why are small businesses going down the tubes?
Well, FEMA, what FEMA, the Small Business Administration, are doing to the people of New Orleans now is worse than the flood.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
I mean, what is there to come back to? New Orleans is going to be a city with about 200,000 people in it at this time next year. We'll have no NFL team anymore because they're going to cut and run. It's all America. You know, the NFL leaving New Orleans is very symbolic of, like, America leaving New Orleans. Like, oh, y'all are doing okay now. I mean, I wish you would come down here and see for yourself.
Well, I have some friends there, and I'm not hearing this from them. I mean, I know it's bad, but I'm under the impression that the main problem that the local officials have is they don't have enough Democrats coming back who fled or who were evacuated, and they're worried about the next elections.
These people in New Orleans are not concerned about those kind of issues anymore, about who's a Democrat and who's a Republican. We're worried about what's going to happen to our city.
Well, I understand. I'm just telling you that Mayor Nagin and the governor are concerned about. So this is where I thought the answer would be to the question, what's wrong with small business? What I'm being told, and I've read some stories, you have to tell me if this is true or not, wages down there are going up because they have to be make pretty good offers to get people to move there and work, and so they're great opportunity for employees to go there. I'm also told that, and that is what I figured what the small business problem was. There just aren't enough employees.
Well, there's no place for people to live.
Well, the whole city, there's nowhere to live in the French Quarter.
I mean,
they're going to do Mardi Gras, for crying out loud.
Well, yes, Mardi Gras is a big business in New Orleans. Think of all the restaurants and the hotels and the people. This is where people's jobs are. And
well, yeah, but you're saying none of that's operating?
Well, the pace at which it is being done is so slow. As you can imagine, if you had a business, you know, you need cash flow.
Yeah.
And so this is the problem. There's going to be a lot of new businesses in New Orleans, all right, because a lot of the old ones are going down the drain. And, you know, what I can't believe is that America is not spending 24 hours a day trying to rebuild New Orleans instead of worrying about Iraq.
Aw.
You know, the question down here is whether America can rebuild New Orleans.
Well, there's no question America can rebuild New Orleans.
Well, $34 billion to build a flood control system that will protect America's fine city from now on.
What about it?
That's what we are asking for, and that is what they're dragging their feet on.
Well, did you know that
Texas gets 100% of their oil and gas separation revenues, and Louisiana gets 10%.
Okay, you're not going to want to hear this.
If Louisiana could get 40% of those revenues, we could build our own levees.
Well, see, the problem with that is that you did that once, and they didn't hold. And we sent a whole bunch of taxpayers. You're not going to want to hear this. I'm sorry, but the taxpayers of this country sent gobs of money down there to the Corps of Engineers, to the local and state departments that are in charge of building those levees, and the money didn't all get spent on the levees, and we see what happened as a result. Now we're being asked to do it again. I think they're taking some time to make sure that the money that does go there goes this time where it's intended to go, not through the same old hands. They're going to siphon some of it off for themselves and their buddies in the process. Back in just a second. As usual, having more fun than a human being should be allowed to have. You know, let me bounce off of Ray's call here, Ray from New Orleans, because this is our first day back on the air in New Orleans at WWL. They have been going, you know, all emergency broadcast with updates on rebuilding circumstances, conditions, all of that. They've been going wall to wall with that since Hurricane Katrina back in September. And today is our first day back. And as such, people actually in New Orleans listening are hearing this program for the first time since Hurricane Katrina. And it might be helpful for those of you in New Orleans if I were to share with you what those of us outside New Orleans are hearing about what's going on there now. Because Ray's call sort of took me aback a little bit until he mentioned Iraq. Then it started making a little sense. But he made it sound like the town is dead. In terms of the Ninth Ward, we're under the impression the decision has been made it's uninhabitable. We were under the impression here, and not just here, but all over the country, that the argument about the Ninth Ward and other poor, devastated areas was an argument over, do we rebuild them as they were, or do we rebuild them brand new? And I was sitting here stunned that there were actually people who wanted to rebuild those neighborhoods as they were, simply because of tradition and culture. Why? Who would do that? Those of us that were commenting on what happened in New Orleans in the aftermath, we're talking about how it would be rebuilt, and we're talking about how some of the blighted areas would be rebuilt with not to look like they had before the hurricane came. And which only stands to reason. When something like this happens, and those of us, you know, we here at the EIB Southern Commander, we're on the wheel of chance, too. We had Hurricane Wilma go through here, and where we are, we happen to get two sides of the eye wall. It wasn't nearly as bad a hurricane as Katrina was. But last year, I just want some of you to know, last year there were a bunch of hurricanes, two of them, I forget their names now, there were so many, but two of them that hit 30 miles north of here within 2 weeks. There are people up there in Vero Beach who still haven't gotten. What? Francis and Jean, was it? Francis and Jean were the hurricane names. There's still people up in Vero Beach and north of here that still haven't gotten from FEMA their roof, other things that they were promised, or their insurance companies. And there were people here in Florida when the mad dash was on to spend $250 billion in New Orleans. Hey, wait, what about us? They were saying, some here in Florida were. As to the $250 billion, I forget when this was. It's got to be within the past 6 weeks. Help me out here. Wasn't there a story that some of this money that's been allocated just sitting there, it hadn't been spent yet? Hasn't been spent yet. It's just sitting there wherever. We don't know why it's tied up, but it's just some of the money's been allocated, and it's just sitting there. And one of the things that has to be paramountly obvious is once the rebuilding of any devastated area by natural disaster commences, it's all going to be local and state oriented. It's going to be private sector oriented. The private sector is going to rebuild. Now, this guy Ray just called and said existing small businesses, the old ones, they're going out because new ones are moving in. Well, now, what does that tell you? If new people are moving in and starting businesses, that's rebuilding going on. There's some sort of rebirth going on. The point is that the story he told about absolute devastation with nothing taking place and no rebuilding going on is not the story that we're getting that comes out of New Orleans, nor is it the story we've gotten for the past 3 months or so. Yeah, it's bad, but I don't mean to overemphasize this, but those of you in New Orleans who have not I don't know what kind of outside media you've had, you've probably been able to watch cable news and so forth, but I will just tell you that one of the big concerns we have heard about is political. That the political leaders, state and city of New Orleans, are really worried that so many people that were relocated and evacuated who were Democrats are not going to come back. That there's either nothing for them or they're finding a happy life, a new life wherever they moved. And that there's no desire to go back on the part of some of them. And this is causing a political concern. In fact, there was a story just last week about the mayor's all concerned about a primary coming up in February, is it? I forget when it is, but he's all concerned about we were telling jokes that he will charter planes to bring people back to vote that day. Is that's what he was making that big a deal about it. So there are political concerns locally, but these stories that he told about absolute devastation, nothing being done, nobody can find work, nobody can do. It's like I told him, I've got a series of stories here that talk about you can really earn a pretty good wage if you want to go to New Orleans because it is tough to get workers there. There are fewer people that are there now than were before the hurricane. But that's pretty normal. That's the way these things happen. It's going to be a long process. I mean, there's no question about it. But you had, you in New Orleans had so much, you had an outpouring of support all across the country. And there were, and I know you, none of you had power in the immediate aftermath, and none of you had the ability to know what was actually going on outside the city in terms of the country's reaction. But believe me, it was big and it was heartfelt, and there were private donations and contributions that exceeded billions and billions of dollars. The American people jumped right in. It was a little bit. It did get politicized because Democrats tried to politicize Bush and FEMA, and they tried to basically blame Bush for the hurricane. I mean, you may not know this, but Minister Farrakhan is actually saying that the levees were blown up, but he's got evidence, and he wants an investigation. There were others that saying, yeah, well, Bush took this opportunity to get rid of a bunch of Democrats out of a state that is predominantly Democrat in the South. There was all kinds of political comments being made, and there was genuine effort to politicize the rebuilding effort and the reaction down there, and it's what we dealt with at the time. And I think Ray, who just called, sort of summed it all up. We had, in fact, you probably did hear this, but one of the first things the Democrats started saying was, "Oh, New Orleans is hopeless. We could have prevented all this. We could have gotten all those people out of there if we just had enough National Guard troops." But Bush sent them all over to Iraq. I mean, the effort to politicize the hurricane itself, the immediate aftermath, was instantaneous. And I think it probably survives and goes on today. People, nothing's being done. There are two ways to get things done. You can go out and do something. You can sit around and wait for somebody else to do it. And it's just that simple. And if you're going to sit around and wait for somebody else to make it the way it was, you're going to find yourself sitting on the sidelines, because there are people coming in who are going to start doing it themselves because they see an opportunity, an economic opportunity in the rebuilding of New Orleans. So you can choose one of two ways. You can sit back and wait for somebody to do it, or you can join the rebuilding process yourself. And I know the questions that begin. Well,
what about money? What about...
That's a universal question. But the bottom line is money will be flowing in there if it's not already. I'm sure it is. Money will be flowing in there. And I'm not sure if the Saints, that's something that's still up in the air, too. If the Superdome were going to be ready by next September, I don't think it'd be a question, but the Superdome's not going to be ready for a year, so that's next season that the Saints can't commit to New Orleans. And that means that the longer they're not there, the plans have to be made to go somewhere permanent, because those guys all have family. Now, what are you smiling at now, Snerdly? What's so, you think I'm skirting the issues here on something? Snerdly says I'm being very nice. I'm just trying to, I don't know what the people in New Orleans who have not been able to listen to this show have been exposed to in the media. I don't know how many of them care about these political side shows that went on. But I'll tell you, it was so much, the political side show in the aftermath nationally was one of the things that I think stood in the way of faster action taking place. There were some people more interested in actually retarding the relief effort so that Bush could be blamed for it. I mean, there were people out there thinking that Bush actually steered the hurricane there, that there's a machine, and that Bush, you know, didn't warn people soon enough, and he wasn't upset that this was going where it was going. You never see these things hitting Crawford, Texas. There's all kinds of wacko stuff out there. And we were dealing with it all. Got to take a break. They're upset with Hillary in New York. They're upset with Hillary at the Daily Cause. They're upset with Hillary on these far left-wing kook websites because she won't take a stand against the war on Iraq. But she did come out against violent video games. Quick timeout. We'll be back after this. Stay with us. It's the Christmas season, a favorite time of year here, the EIB Network. Rush Limbaugh, America's anchorman, America's truth detector, America's doctor of democracy, all combined as one harmless, lovable little fuzzball. All right, two Hillary stories and then a column by Jimmy Breslin today at New York Newsday. Senator Hillary Clinton on Tuesday defended her vote to authorize war in Iraq amid growing unease among liberal Democrats who could determine the potential 2008 presidential candidate's future. I take responsibility for my vote, and I, along with the majority of Americans, expect the president and his administration to take responsibility for the false assurances, the faulty evidence, and the mismanagement of the war. She said this in a lengthy letter to thousands of people who've written her about the war. At the same time, she said the U.S. must finish what it started in Iraq. Okay, this did not satisfy him out there, folks. This does not satisfy him at all. She also, she's been strangely silent on most of the issues of the day, but she has come out loudly against video game violence. So she come out loudly against video game violence. She's also stayed the course on keeping the troops in Iraq with the little side reference to the Bush administration needs to be honest and blah, blah, blah. What does all this tell us? Well, it tells us that she has been the spouse of a serial abuser of women, so she has to support legislation that looks to be family friendly. She's got to come out against this violence and video game stuff, or she has no credibility. She has a lifetime of hostility towards the military, so she has to be seen supportive of public policy that appears to be military friendly. She also insisted on being on the Senate Armed Services Committee. So I think what happens here is that Hillary makes public policy moves that shore up her weaknesses that probably show up in private polling. I mean, when you get right down to it, folks, forget the imagery and the makings of the trappings of PR and so forth. Do you really, when you sit down and stop and think about it, do you really see Hillary Clinton as commander-in-chief? Even you ladies in the... Do you really see that? No, we don't see this. When you really stop and think about it... Now, they're trying to craft all kinds of PR to convince us otherwise, but it's unimaginable as commander-in-chief. So she does what she can to cover that fault. It's unimaginable as a father or mother of the country, so she does what she can to cover up that flaw. I think the point is that most of Hillary's public persona is to cover flaws, is to mask what she really is, which is the truth of most Democrats, which takes me to the Jimmy Breslin column in New York Newsday. Headline says it'll take a stand, not our Hillary. Beautiful. I'm in receipt today of a mailing from the Hillary Rodham Clinton campaign. This is different from the letter she sent out by email in a rush. I don't know who got the email. She announces it's 1,600 words long. That much of her sentences could end reading. The letter I got is more than a dead, dry political mailing. I found it such compelling reading that I drop everything and share with you promptly and thus prominently. And he goes on to just rip her to shreds. Here are Hillary's critical issues: economy, jobs. She sent a questionnaire. She wants people to respond to her, tell them what they think the most important issues in the country are. So she wants to know what they think of economy and jobs, the environment, Social Security, Medicare, education, Homeland Security, health care, tax cuts, reproductive rights, separation of church and state. Breslin says, absolutely marvelous. Nothing about Iraq or the life and death of young Americans in Iraq or troop withdrawals from Iraq. So I go through the rest of the pamphlet. How concerned are you that President Bush is not doing enough to get Americans back to work, create more jobs, and get the economy moving again? Absolutely beautiful. There are, as stated earlier, now more than 2,000 young Americans who've died in Iraq, and she wants to be a candidate for president. She doesn't even mention our dead or our next dead. Wait, here's question 9. How concerned are you that the administration's unilateral policies have reduced our number of allies and endangered our national security? Breslin says, well, how absolutely marvelous. Hillary Clinton today holds the new North American record for fakery. She copies. She sneaks and slithers past you with her opinion on a war that kills every day. Hillary Clinton's in favor of the war and of executions. Sensational. We now have Hillary Clinton blowing on her fingers as she goes about cracking the combination to another safe. If the one hand glistens, it's from the wedding ring that she has used to hypnotize the public so far. Beautiful. Jimmy Breslin is as liberal as Hillary is, and he has seen the light. This, but It's just, if she had just put something in there about Bush lied, Bush sucks, Bush is killing troops, we need to pull troops out, he would love her. Democratic Party is a bunch of anti-war misfits. They are pathetic, and she is not saying what they want to hear, folks. And it's when he starts using terms like, I love this, blowing on her fingers as she goes about cracking the combination to another safe, that means she is breaking into something. That means she's illegitimately getting something, as in elected, is what he means. Be back right after this. All right, Pat in Cadenceville, Maryland, you're next. You're our last call today. I have about a minute, but I wanted to get to you. Thank you.
Yeah, real quick, Rush, long-time listener, very long-time listener, second-time caller. Nancy Pelosi, between now and the time Bush just finished, they played on the local news here the actual soundbite of her saying that Bush's speech, which was the one that you mentioned was accompanied by raucous applause, would thunderous applause be too bad a term for it?
No.
So she called it an insult to the intelligence of the American people, and she called it warmed over stew. That's what she actually said. They had a tape of her saying that. I always thought the people down there at Annapolis were not exactly the dimmest bulbs in the chandelier. You got to be pretty bright to get into Annapolis. What does that say about her attitude towards them?
This is not a surprise. But the guy that she needs to talk to is John Kerry. John Kerry says the Democrats are positive. They want success. And here's Pelosi. Pelosi really, I think, has the IQ of a pencil eraser, folks. The bottom line, it's people don't want to say that publicly, but I will. It's embarrassing to listen to her talk.